Namaste. So, we're working in the first chapter of the Yoga of Divine Love, Love in the Triple Path. Sri Aurobindo here is framing the subject and going to substantial lengths to ensure that we understand that knowledge and works and love are all part of an entire single being. To become one with the divine in the mind is knowledge. To become one with the divine in active life is communion in will and work. To become one with the divine in the heart, in rhapsody, in love, that is the path of devotion. Love, work, knowledge carry us each through a unique path to the same divine. Blend them, synthesize them, they form a triple means of acquiring this unity in conscious being with that which transcends and yet stands immanent within this whole universe. Within ourselves too is this truth. So Sri Aurobindo begins this essay with the idea that through work we can commune with the divine. Karma Yoga proceeds to knowledge so that we can know that being for whom we work and arrives at the crowning experience of love, which completes. So we're about halfway through this essay. We're going to pick it up with this sentence. The way of bhakti is supposed often to be necessarily inferior because it proceeds by worship, which belongs to that stage of spiritual experience where there is a difference, an insufficient unity between the human soul and the divine. Because its very principle is love, and love means always two, the lover and the beloved. A dualism, therefore, while oneness is the highest spiritual experience, and because it seeks after the personal God, while the impersonal is the highest and the eternal truth, if not even the soul reality. This is, of course, the position that Shankara takes in Advaita Vedanta, that if you are drawn to it as you are moving from ignorance towards knowledge and you must worship a personal form of a deity, if you have an Ishta Devata, then so be that for your path at the moment, but you will sooner or later transcend that, set down this seeming eidolon, and move into the pure impersonal reality, which is Brahman. For Ramanuja, this is an insolent disregard of a greater truth, that this Supreme Being who is Brahman is also capable of being a full person. And this person extends itself in endless display throughout the whole universe. We leave aside the sublime philosophy of Abhinavagupta. Abhinavagupta, whom we like to think of as the leading figure of what is the Trika philosophy, Kashmir Shaivism, as it used to be called, poetic, brilliant, and in many ways comparable to Sri Aurobindo, saw that same single divinity, that one Godhead, peoples itself in all the universe and stands at the center of every being. There is nothing at which you can point which is absent the presence of the divine being. And that was his reigning experience, very similar in some ways, more complete in others, than even Ramanuja's. But Sri Aurobindo here is giving the lie to Shankara. Shankara's insistence that only the impersonal divine, wiped clean of all cosmic contagion, of all personal possibility, is the single reality. One can do better, one can do a more complete yoga. So he continues. But worship is only the first step on the path of devotion, where external worship changes into the inner adoration, real bhakti begins. That deepens into the intensity of divine love. That love leads to the joy of closeness in our relations with the divine. The joy of closeness passes into the bliss of union. And again, we go back to the root meaning of bhaj, from which the term bhakti comes, which is to attach, to become close to commune with. So the first thing is to come into relationship with this greater being, to merge the small with the large, the microcosm with the macrocosm, the spark with the fire. And as one advances in the power of that communion, one comes eventually into this bliss of union. And this, you can see, we like these citations, I take it, from the Gita and other texts. So, Gita chapter 9, shloka 34, chapter 11, shloka 54, and we go on. Love, too, as well as knowledge, brings us to a highest oneness, and it gives to that oneness its greatest possible depth and intensity. And that's Gita, chapter 18, shlokas 54 and 5. It is true that love returns gladly upon a difference in oneness, by which the oneness itself becomes richer and sweeter. So let's go back to the life divine for a moment, where Sri Aurobindo has described that unknowable, unassignable, beyond all categorization, truth of being. Can we even call it that? But whatever that might be, when it looks at itself affirmatively, it is Satchit Ananda. Existence, consciousness, bliss, and consciousness is always twinned with power, because to be conscious is to have regnance. So, this Satchit Ananda is capable of looking within itself, of bringing forth its illimitability into measured manifestation. And it does this through an agency of consciousness that Sri Aurobindo calls the supermind, vijnana, the great knowledge. This power to translate the infinite into real forms, which are full of that reality, conscious with that power, vibrating with that delight, can stand in a relationship with itself at what he calls the tertiary level, in which oneness is not lost, but oneness has become the ground of being and the perfect subjectivity of the supramental consciousness sees itself at play in objects and enjoys that play. Something of that connotation, those chapters in The Life Divine, I think, have already been written by the time Sri Aurobindo comes to this chapter, Love in the Triple Path, in the Synthesis of Yoga, has been set down as a marker. So this returns upon that idea, as above, so below. Even here, clouded by division, this idea of the richness of being, infinitely spread before us in the universe, is here for a reason of delight. And one cannot get lost in it. One can explore infinitely and through any thread of being find one's way back to the source from which we came. This is the weakness of the mind, that it limits itself by its thoughts, its positive and negative ideas, the aspects of the divine reality that it sees, and tends too much to pit one against the other. Thought in the mind, vichara, the philosophic trend by which mental knowledge approaches the divine, is apt to lend a greater importance to the abstract over the concrete, to that which is high and remote over that which is intimate and near. So he's been, in a sense, dressing down Advaita Vedanta. Now it's Raja Yoga's turn, because vichara is part of the ascending possibilities that is opened in this path of knowledge, the king's way, by which one learns to sit, compose, to control the breath, to withdraw attention from the senses, and then to concentrate within and strive through this power of concentration, dharana, and through extending that into meditation to enter into a state of consciousness where one is wholly absorbed within, first with the support of forms, sampragnata, and there are four main ones, vitarka and vichara, which Sri Aurobindo mentions here, to reflect, to ponder. Ananda, obviously, the experience of bliss, and who is experiencing that but asmita, the sense of self. So eventually one pushes beyond into a deep embrace of conscious being in which all necessity of support disappears and one sits in an absolute samadhi, asampragnata. But Sri Aurobindo is here talking about that philosophic approach, this beginning approach as one advances towards the experience of spiritual union. It finds, he writes, a greater truth in the delight of the one in itself, a lesser truth or even a falsehood in the delight of the one in the many, and of the many in the one, a greater truth in the impersonal and the nirguna, a lesser truth or a falsehood in the personal and the saguna. But the divine is beyond our oppositions of ideas, beyond the logical contradictions we make between his aspects. He is not, we have seen, bound and restricted by exclusive unity. His oneness realizes itself in infinite variation, and to the joy of that love has the completest key, without therefore missing the joy of the unity. So, this is his own growing experience from 1908, with the experience of Brahma-Nirvana, into 1909, where his experience of the universal divine as a personal being becomes greater and greater and more complete, all the way through 1910 to 1914, where the richness of what he's assembling, he's ready to speak about. And then, lo, come these visitors from France, Mira and Paul Richard. And she becomes his radiant collaborator. So, let's read that again. He is not, we have seen, bound and restricted by exclusive unity. His oneness realizes itself in infinite variation, and to the joy of that love has the completest key, without therefore missing the joy of the unity. So, the perplexing, the baffling immensity of this one multiplied endlessly to the view is a rich and enriching experience. The highest knowledge and highest spiritual experience by knowledge find his oneness as perfect as his various relations with the many, as in his self-absorbed delight. If to thought the impersonal seems the wider and higher truth, the personal, a narrower experience, the spirit finds both of them to be aspects of a reality which figures itself in both. And if there is a knowledge of that reality to which thought arrives by insistence on the infinite impersonality, there is also a knowledge of it to which love arrives by insistence on the infinite personality. The spiritual experience of each leads, if followed to the end, to the same ultimate truth. By bhakti, as by knowledge, as the Gita tells us, we arrive at unity with the Purushottama, the Supreme, who contains in himself the impersonal and numberless personalities, the qualityless and infinite qualities, pure being, consciousness, and delight, and the endless play of their relations. Well, we can summarize that in a single image which comes out of South India. Nataraj, the Lord of the Dance. Because there, as he whirls and spins into innumerable existence, comes this Supreme Being, all of it contained within the arc of his consciousness. And as he spins it out, as he dances it out, as he puts his own rhythm into the expression of his own being, his gaze is inside. He remains absolute, undisturbed, full of peace, despite the fury of the dance, the transience of the display in the universe. Always, the one remains, the only being, never changed, and you are that. To that we can look in the Gita also, chapter 9, verse 13. This is a translation as Sri Aurobindo rendered it. The great souled who dwell in the divine nature know me as the imperishable for whom all existences originate. And so knowing, they turn to me with a soul and entire love. The devotee, on the other hand, tends to look down on the sawdust dryness of mere knowledge. And it is true that philosophy by itself, without the rapture of spiritual experience, is something as dry as it is clear and cannot give all the satisfaction we seek, that it's spiritual experience even, when it has not left its supports of thought and shot up beyond the mind, lives too much in an abstract delight, and that what it reaches is not indeed the void it seems to the passion of the heart, but still has the limitations of the peaks. So, if we don't transcend the mind, we don't get to the pure experience of the wideness of that conscious being, chit shakti. On the other hand, love itself is not complete without knowledge. The Gita distinguishes between three initial kinds of bhakti, that which seeks refuge in the divine from the sorrows of the world, artha, that which, desiring, approaches the divine as the giver of its good, artharthi, and that which, attracted by what it already loves but does not yet know, yearns to know this divine unknown, jignasu, but it gives the palm to the bhakta that knows. Evidently, the intensity of passion which says, I do not understand, I love, and loving cares not to understand, is not love's last self-expression, but its first, nor is it its highest intensity. By the way, you find this at Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, shloka 16, Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhaktir Vishishyate. Rather, as knowledge of the divine grows, delight in the divine and love of it must increase. Nor can mere rapture be secure without the foundation of knowledge. To live in what we love gives that security, and to live in it means to be one with it in consciousness. And oneness of consciousness is the perfect condition of knowledge. Ekatvam, the experience of oneness. Knowledge of the divine gives to love of the divine its firmest security, opens to it its own widest joy of experience, raises it to its highest pinnacles of outlook. If the mutual misunderstandings of these two powers are in ignorance, knowledge, love, no less so is the tendency of both to look down on the way of works as inferior to their own loftier pitch of spiritual achievement. There is an intensity of love, as there is an intensity of knowledge, to which works seem something outward and distracting. But works are only thus outward and distracting when we have not found oneness of will and consciousness with the Supreme. When once that is found, works become the very power of knowledge and the very outpouring of love. If knowledge is the very state of oneness and love its bliss, divine works are the living power of its light and sweetness. So again, an echo of Satchit Ananda, a later concept, but something near and dear to Sri Aurobindo. And you can look to chapter 11 in the Gita, shloka 55. For assonance here. There is a movement of love, as in the aspiration of human love, to separate the lover and the loved in the enjoyment of their exclusive oneness, away from the world and from all others, shut up in the nuptial chambers of the heart. That is perhaps an inevitable movement of this path, but still, the widest love, fulfilled in knowledge, sees the world not as something other and hostile to this joy, but as the being of the beloved and all creatures as his being. And in that vision, divine works find their joy and their justification. So again, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, shlokas 16, 17, 18. This is the knowledge in which an integral yoga must live. We have to start Godward from the powers of the mind, the intellect, the will, the heart, and in the mind all is limited. Limitations. Exclusiveness, there can hardly fail to be at the beginning and for a long time on the way. But an integral yoga will wear these more loosely than more exclusive ways of seeking, and it will sooner emerge from the mental necessity. It may commence with the way of love, as with the way of knowledge or of works, but where they meet is the beginning of its joy, of fulfillment. Love it cannot miss, even if it does not start from it. For love is the crown of works and the flowering of knowledge. That is our chapter. As we move forward, and next time we step into chapter 2, the motives of devotion, we'll have occasion to bring forward some of the relevant portions of the Shandilya Bhakti Sutras or the Narada Bhakti Sutras. But tonight we'll close with a section from Savitri. This is in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, Canto 3, the entry into the inner countries. And I think we'll start on page 496. The Spirit's almighty freedom was not here. A schoolman mind had captured life's large space, but chose to live in bare and paltry rooms, parked off from the too vast, dangerous universe, fearing to lose its soul in the infinite. Even the idea's ample sweep was cut into a system, chained to fixed pillars of thought, or riveted to matter's solid ground. Or else the soul was lost in its own heights. Obeying the ideal's high-browed law, thought based a throne on unsubstantial air, disdaining earth's flat triviality. It barred reality out to live in its dreams, or all stepped into a systemed universe. Life's empire was a managed continent, its thoughts an army ranked and disciplined, uniformed. They kept the logic of their fixed place at the bidding of the trained centurion mind. Or each stepped into its station like a star, or marched through fixed and constellated heavens, or kept its feudal rank among its peers in the sky's unchanging cosmic hierarchy. Or like a high-bred maiden with chaste eyes, forbidden to walk unveiled the public ways, she must in close, secluded chambers move, her feeling in cloisters live or garden paths. Life was consigned to a safe, level path. It dared not tempt the great and difficult heights, or climb to be neighbor to a lonely star, or skirt the danger of the precipice, or tempt the foam-curled breaker's perilous laugh. adventure's lyrist, danger's amateur, or into her chamber call some flaming god, or lead the world's bounds, and where no limits are, meet with the heart's passion the adorable, or set the world ablaze with the inner fire. A chastened epithet in the prose of life, she must fill with color just her sanctioned space, not break out of the cabin of the idea, nor trespass into rhythms too high or vast. Even when it soared into ideal air, thought's flight lost not itself in heaven's blue. It drew upon the skies a patterned flower of disciplined beauty and harmonic light. A temperate, vigilant spirit governed life. Its acts were tools of the considering thought, too cold to take fire and set the world ablaze, or the careful reason's diplomatic moves, testing the means to a prefigured end, or at the highest pitch some calm will's plan, or a strategy of some high command within to conquer the secret treasures of the gods, or win for a masked king some glorious world, not a reflex of the spontaneous self, an index of the being and its moods, a winging of conscious spirit, a sacrament of life's communion with the still supreme, or its pure movement on the eternal's road. Or else, for the body of some high idea, a house was built with two close-fitting bricks. Action and thought cemented made a wall of small ideals limiting the soul. Even meditation mused on a narrow seat. And worship turned to an exclusive God, to the universal in a chapel prayed, whose doors were shut against the universe. Or kneeled to the bodiless impersonal, a mind shut to the cry and fire of love. A rational religion dried the heart. It planned to smooth life's acts with ethics rules, or offered a cold and flameless sacrifice. The sacred book lay on its sanctified desk, wrapped in interpretation's silken strings, a credo sealed up its spiritual sense. Abandon all dharmas. Namaste. Jai Ma.